Hello and welcome to episode number 3 of the Eggers Gallery Podcast. I'm your host, Michael Eggers. Our show recognizes and celebrates visual artists who exhibit their art at the Eggers Gallery. If you would like to exhibit with us, keep your eyes peeled for our calls to artists at eggersgallery.com. Today's episode is an interview with visual artist K.A. Letts. And now let's take a peek inside the artist's studio.
Hi, this is K.A. Letts. I'm a mid-career figurative painter working and living in the Detroit area. I have an interest in narrative art, which is inspired by literary works such as Ovid's Metamorphosis and biblical stories. I work mostly in black and white. Also, I write for my own blog on art in the area called RustBeltArts.com. Just finished a show at the Riverhouse Arts Gallery in Toledo called Transhuman, and I'm preparing for a one-person show in Chicago next December at Firecat Studios.
Well, that sounds like you've got a full slate there, K.A. We really appreciate you participating in the Machinery Show here at the Eggers Gallery. We look forward to this podcast we're about to start here. So our first question is, how is your personality reflected in your artwork?
Well, I think that all any artist has to offer is their self and their experience and all the things that they are. And the more successful the artist is, the more that's reflected in their work.
What would you say inspires or influences your art?
Well, I'm actually a big fan of art history, and I go to the museum a lot because I consider the artists who are exhibited there to be my peers. When I go, I find that they really inspire me. And the other artists who I happen to have a real affinity for are the members of the Chicago Who, Jim Nutt, Gladys Nilsson, Carl Wersum, Roger Brown, Ed Paschke, and Christina Ramberg. They're figurative artists who have a really strong affinity for outsider art as well. And I really find their work is very exciting to me. And I like to think that I'm kind of in their ballpark in terms of my imagery and my methods.
And how would you say if you come across a creative block, how do you overcome it?
It was funny. I was reading that question. I was like, I don't have creative blocks. I just make bad work. and then I have to.
I don't believe it. I don't believe it for one second.
I've always really had a pretty good flow into the studio, and you think that the work you're making is really great, but about halfway through the work, you see it's not going the way you intended to, and that's when you start to get really frustrated. So what I usually do when that happens is I take the work of art and I put it away so I can't look at it for a certain amount of time, and then when I get it back out, usually I can figure out where to put my energy going forward.
What would you say makes art good to you?
Well, that's a really thorny question. I think that the work that I find really exciting is the work that reflects the essence of the artist and that artist's time and that artist's worldview. And most of all, I think good art is what I would call transcendent, so that the sum of all of its parts and all of the ingredients that go into make it amounts to something that's greater than that. And a good example of that, to me, is the work of El Anatsui, who is an African artist. He makes these beautiful tapestries, which are fabricated from the discarded bottle tops of liquor bottles that he finds in the dump. And they're just the most beautiful thing. And so he's taking these sort of symptoms of social and environmental decay in his environment, and he's transforming them into something that's truly beautiful. And to me, that's what a really good piece of art is, or to pick an artist that everybody knows better. I would say that Van Gogh's Starry Night is a good example of that as well. You're starting out with, you know, just some paints and a canvas, and yet he manages to get beyond that, and you honestly feel that you're looking at a night sky, and not just looking at any night sky, but that night sky.
A transcendent night sky.
A transcendent night sky.
So you talked about, you know, sometimes if you're working on a piece and it's not going quite right, you're setting it aside and coming back to it. How do you know when a work is finished?
In the instance of my work, it's not as hard as it is for some other artists, because I take it too far state of completion. I think some artists who work very intuitively, or especially in the area of abstraction, find it difficult because it's very easy to overwork that and end up with something that's kind of muddy or uninspired. The way that I have of working, which is to paint the surface black and then create artwork on top of that, means that if I find a part that I feel isn't working well, I can just paint it out in black, you know, sort of no harm, no foul. and that is a way for me to work that has turned out to be pretty successful.
If we're in your studio, what would you say is your most important tool, your artist tool that you couldn't live without?
My brain.
Good answer.
Yeah, I'm not really married to any particular thing except maybe black gesso. And I feel like what I bring to the artwork is an interest in storytelling, that and also an interest in art history that gets put into my pictures. And that's the tough part about painting, I find, is that you're creating something that you hope is a convincing work of art out of something that's coming out of your brain.
Manifesting right before your eyes.
It is. It's a little different for a photographer because your editing process takes place after you've shot the pictures, so that you can sort of choose which images are successful. And the only exception to that, it seems to me, is photographers who work in staged photography. And I noticed you said you liked Andy Goldsworthy. And he's a good example of an artist who sort of makes a momentary composition, photographs it, and then that's his artwork, which is another way of working. Mm-hmm. I like his work too a lot.
How would you go about starting a work?
I usually start with a pretty specific. I start everything by painting it black, first of all. Mm-hmm. But I start out with a pretty specific idea of what it is the story that I want to tell. That idea almost never survives the first half hour that I work on the piece. So that's the process of being creative, sort of doing something on the surface and then responding to what it is you see. So it's a kind of a dialectic that you're performing with this inanimate object.
Yes, it's a good way of describing that. Always a work in progress, you know, the dialogue back and forth. How would you say your practice has changed over time from when you started as an artist to today? Is there anything have you had any major changes in the way you produce your art?
Well, I've been working for more than 30 years, so you can imagine there's been a few changes. I started out in the theater as a set and costume designer. I graduated from Yale School of Drama. Over time, I found that I didn't enjoy working collaboratively with other people. So I started, my interest in fine art continued to grow, and I moved back to New York City and started studying sculpture. 10 years that I was in New York City, I actually did quite a bit of sculpture and showed my work at various different places. After I moved back to the Midwest, to the Detroit area, I decided that I would try working more two-dimensionally, and that's what I've been doing ever since.
You've really come full circle. You've dabbled in every piece, it seems like, almost.
Mm-hmm.
Could you describe a specific real-life situation that inspired a piece of artwork that you've done?
Actually, I saw that question. I was thinking about it about in the early 80s when I just moved back to New York City and I was working as an artist. I remember coming down the stairs of the subway to the D train one day, and I noticed that in the subway system there, they have these sort of open spaces for advertising. I think the D train didn't have much advertising because a lot of those squares had been painted black. And I did a double take because I saw this really charming drawing of a dog barking at the bottom of the stairs. And I really loved it. And I was very struck by the generosity of the artist who'd sort of taken this blank space and activated it. And that artist was Keith Haring.
Interesting. What would you say is your favorite art website that you visit the most often?
Well, I read quite a bit of art criticism because I've been doing a lot of writing. So I like to check out Hyperallergic, New City, which is actually comes out of Chicago, so that's more of a local outlet for me. The ArtNet News.
Okay.
I don't look at too much actual art. I mean, just online look at art in person, because I don't feel like, even though you get some idea of what the content of an artwork is when you see it online, you don't really get a sense of the scale or how it's going to feel when you're standing in the same room with it. Mm-hmm. So I'm still pretty serious about getting out there and just looking at the actual stuff. I don't think that's really true of photography so much. So I think as photography is a really great medium for the internet age.
And painting, it's always good to see that, you know, the depth and layering that you can't quite, doesn't always come through on a
mm-hmm.
photograph or a website.
Yeah, and I'm sure if you're a professional photographer, there are things about it that you find unsatisfactory as well.
Mm-hmm.
I think some pieces look better online than they do in real life. And mm-hmm. I know for my work, it's very graphic, and so I think that part comes through really well. But you can't appreciate it when you're looking at it in 72 DPI in a tiny
yeah.
screen, when
yeah.
the fact is 3 or 4 feet, you know, wide and 4 or 5 feet high. I think in a way it does a disservice to the art to look at it that way, but it's an irresistible urge that we all have.
Where would you say you've had the best luck selling your art? Would that be on a website, at an art fair? Where would you say you've had your best luck at selling your pieces?
I've never tried to sell my work on a, well, actually that's not true. I have a website called Turning Art where I sell basically rights to prints of my work, and that they every once in a while they send me a royalty check. I don't pay too much attention to them. But mostly my work is shown in galleries, and I'm represented by River House Arts in Toledo.
Nice.
And so that's mostly where my sales get made.
Okay.
I don't do art fairs because that's a whole different kind of arm of the art industry. And it requires mm-hmm. you to make art of a certain type that isn't the type that I make. And also you have to travel around, and you know, it's own little thing.
And how would you describe, if you were to take us a virtual walkthrough through your studio when you're creating a piece, what could you describe that? You know, what are you listening to music? If so, what genre? You know, are you painting in the morning, in the evening? What sort of your routines when you're creating your art?
Well, I get up in the morning and I put on my basic, sometimes I call them pajamas, but they're just paint clothes. And I go into the studio and I work from 9 to 12. I usually have talk radio on NPR,
okay.
because it keeps me from, you know, kind of getting too focused on the work and doing something bad. But I work, usually on the flat. So I'll either have, if the work is really large, it goes on the floor.
Mm-hmm.
And then if it's smaller, I can work on it on a kind of a standing table that I have there. And then after I have lunch, I go back to the studio and work from 12:30 to 3:30, and that's my day. That's my creative day. And then sometimes I have to take a day to go around and look at art shows in various locations so that I can write about. So that's probably one day a week or 2 days.
That's a fun excursion.
Yeah, well, honestly, if I didn't write about art, I'm afraid that I would just stay in the studio all the time. Because that's what I find the most satisfying. But one of the reasons I started writing about art is because I know it's really important for you as an artist and for your career to get to know people and sort of get to see other kinds of art and really be part of the art community. Because it's a people type of operation, and you have to do that. It's something that some people find comes naturally. I don't. But if I know I have to write 700 words about it, I get myself out there and look at the work.
In your studio, do you have a favorite brand of art supplies that when you're getting new supplies, you know, you're looking for this specific thing every time? Do you have anything like that?
Well, I think I've sort of limited my means so that I don't have to think about it too much. I mostly work on Lenox 100 print paper in a 38 by 50 inch size. And sometimes those are doubled in size to make a really large piece, or on a wood panel.
Okay.
And I almost invariably, this isn't always true, but I mostly paint whatever it is black to start out. Then I take a chalk or a chalk pencil, and I start more or less drawing the composition. And of course, I have tremendous freedom within that those constraints, because if I don't like what I've drawn, I just erase it as if it were a blackboard.
Right.
The black gesso that I like to use is a Dick Blick, which is a kind of super velvety matte black. And then the white is another white gesso. It doesn't really matter. We use Liquitex. And I use a gray gesso, which is a Liquitex product as well. So those are kind of the basics of what I do.
Nice. Sound like you've got all your ducks in a row there.
I read someplace that editing is the only art, and I find that the less variety of materials I use, the more free I feel.
Keep it simple.
Mm-hmm.
For our last question, what's the best tip you could give another artist?
I actually got some great advice in that regard from Alan Klein, who's an art advisor in Chicago. And he says there's three rules to sort of be sort of successful in the art profession. Now, that's different from maybe being successful as an artist. But the first thing he said is it's very important for you to create work that's uniquely your own, that it's absolutely every time somebody sees that work, they go, okay, that's K.A. Letts's work.
Mm-hmm.
The second rule is that you have to get out and be part of the art community. You have to meet people and be present at various art events so that people either don't forget about you or don't know who you are. And the third is to make really high quality art. And he said that's almost a distant third, because you can have a very successful career as a professional artist, but your work will only last if it's really excellent. But that comes along later. So that was the advice I got, and I think it's probably pretty accurate.
Good words to live by, definitely.
Yes.
Well, K.A., we'd like to thank you for showing at the Machinery Show here at the Eggers Gallery, and we are excited to see what you do in the future.
The Eggers Gallery would like to thank all the participating artists at the Machinery Show. Those include John Schlichter, K.A. Letts, Benji Ruckus Pearson, Brian McClear, Bruce Howard, Matthew Bailey, and Matt Smith. For more information about these artists, you can go to eggersgallery.com. Thank you for joining us on our Peek Inside the Artist Studio.